Luba Mayakisa joining us on the line as well. Luba, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Howard. I'm good. Cape Town is good, deserted.
Yes. Just how you Cape Townians like it.
Interesting times.
Yeah, you know, you Cape Townians hate it when us Joburgers come down and take all the best schnitzel from Checkers in Sea Point.
We might be laid back, Howard, but we do like a bit of life. We're not quite like, you know, earthworms
right.
Living all by ourselves. So it's different. Interesting
Luba,
one that got stopped yesterday. I went to.
Sorry, Luba, I don't know if you've seen, there's a guy on Instagram. Chad Nathan, he goes by the name of Ginger with a GoPro, and he took a drone and flew it over Cape Town, over the beaches, over the Sea Point Promenade, down Adderley Street and the main streets in Cape Town, and everything is deserted. So if you haven't seen that, look for Ginger with a GoPro on Instagram and go look at the video, the drone footage that he took at Cape Town. It's eerie.
Yeah, it is eerie. Yeah. But absolutely.
Look, I had to drive on Sunday. On Sunday, I had to go and meet somebody selling masks in Century City, and I drove from the CBD. And it was quite bizarre. I literally drove from town to Century City without passing a single car. And I took some pictures. You know, when you see these movies about the end of the world, you know, post-apocalypse, it was literally like that, where it was just deserted. I think I saw one street sweeper, and I couldn't figure out why he was out busy sweeping the street. But except for that person, I did not encounter anybody else, you know, until I got to where I was going.
It's interesting. I don't think Joburg is that deserted. We're definitely seeing cars on the road here. I've been driving only for the last 2 days to and from studio. And when I leave studio to go back home just after 9, there are definitely cars on the road. It's quieter, but it isn't completely, completely deserted.
But you guys aren't very compliant, so I'm not surprised.
What a thing to say. Howard, defend us. It's not a you defender.
I haven't been out to have a look, to be quite honest. But I'm told from people who were working and had permission to work in Sandton that there was a little bit of the rush hour yesterday afternoon getting out of Sandton.
So I think more people are coming out.
And that's a little worrisome.
Well, look, I think also Sandton, there are a lot of banks, though, to be fair. And the banking industry is, many parts of the banking industry is considered an essential service.
Because on the first day it was deserted. It really was. But I think now more and more people are coming out, obviously going to banks and going to supermarkets and all of
Don't. Please don't.
Our homeless guys are out in the streets, though. That's the interesting thing. In the intersections, they're still there. I'm not quite sure who they're hoping to see, but every time I drive or I walk, I see the guys at the intersections.
Yeah.
I got stopped yesterday.
Good. Yes.
It was interesting. It wasn't what I expected. I'd literally pulled into a garage, bought some stuff, and as I got in the car, there were like four police vehicles in the forecourt, and I got in the car. As I was about to drive, one pulled up next to me, and I thought, they said nothing. So I thought, well, they want to chat. And lady came out with a notebook, and she said, oh no, we're just asking some questions. Can I ask, what's your first name? I gave her my first name. Your last name? I gave her the last name, and she said, oh, okay. Thought that's bizarre. You know, nothing else, no driver's license, no permit, nothing. Says, oh, I can see you just bought some food. I just need your name. And she wrote my name down.
Yeah, well, I think the point is that we can go and get food. So, you certainly don't need a permit for that. But, I think on the most part, people are being very compliant, and I'm proud of people. And it's not easy. It really, really isn't easy. And I think that on the most part, aside from the odd jogger in Glen Hazel, who we're going to shame out of existence, but aside from that, I think that most people are abiding by this and understand that they need to.
The challenge, though, is that it's different areas. When I look around the CBD, they man a checkpoint from 8 o'clock until 5. Now, when I speak to people in the townships, it's a very different experience. And I was also, when the police car pulled up next to me, I had mixed feelings as well, because I was trying to figure out what this is about. And I think a lot of us do get defensive when the police, you know, pull up next to you, because I think some of us, our encounters have been generally negative. So though it was a pleasant one, it was quite amusing, because in the end, you know, she just walked back to her car. And our daughter, who had parked on the other side, as I drove off, came screaming and running, "Dad, Dad." And I said, "What's the problem?" And she said, "Are you getting arrested?" I said, "No, she just asked for my details." And she was petrified. I mean, she left the car and she sprinted across the forecourt. And I was worried about her. I thought something happened. She says, "No, are you getting arrested?" I said, "No."
Lupa, I think she was hoping for it. She wanted some peace and quiet at home.
Yeah, look, we had some territorial wars yesterday because my two sons who are at home with us, we find that they are very, very colonial in their approach, and they basically just take over everything without asking permission. So and then expect service. So very, very traditionally colonial, but we've now started sort of banning them from certain rooms. They can't take over everything. There's certain places, but and everyone's got to learn to respect everybody else's space as well.
So, Howard, tell me about the donations. So the donations are turning out not to be donations after all, they're loans.
Really?
It seems like it. The president got up and he said, you know, this family's donated $1 billion and the other one $1 billion. Now, when I read further, I find that the one from the Rupert is going to business partners. But it's a loan up to 60 months, and you have to pay it back. They'll give you an interest holiday in the first year, but thereafter, payments and interest.
But Luba, I think what they are is it's a donation to the fund. But what the fund does, it gives people interest-free loan.
No, I'm not disputing that. But I think there's a lot of amusement because I think initially it came out as this was a straight-up donation to the nation. And so it kind of evokes interesting responses around the country. And now clarity has come out that it is a loan. I mean, regardless of what it is quite generous for people to step up.
Right, so how it says they've stepped forward. It's how it's implemented is I guess the decision. And I see this morning as well that there was a further billion rand donated by the Oppenheimers. So there's now they've effectively as a family donated 2 billion rand, which I think is just quite unbelievable.
And what I think is amazing, if you look at NASPES as a donation of 1.5 billion rand. They say they're giving $500 million through to the Solidarity Fund, but they also going to spend R1 billion in China bringing in masks, PPE equipment, and other medical equipment that they can themselves procure in China. And I think that's amazing because that's going to bypass a lot of the government problems with procurement. Here, private enterprise is donating R1 billion of medical equipment. And you see Jack Ma from Alibaba has also donated medical equipment to South Africa.
You see, from my experience, it's been very interesting because I got involved in this medical space. And yesterday we heard that there was a VAT exemption on imports. But you can't get clarity. You ask this person is saying only on imported stuff. But once it lands here and you're selling it, there's VAT. So that's the first bit of confusion. Then government has got various funds like the National Empowerment Fund and so forth that are set up to help. But if you go into these websites, they're quite laborious. You know, they're asking for a business plan. They're asking for 1 million things. So they don't make the process any more streamlined. And, you know, you put the application, it says, well, give us 4 to 8 days to come back to you. And I thought they would have streamlined that quite considerably. And I mean, speaking of the products that are being sold, I mean, to give you an idea, especially in Joburg, you were buying a box of 20 masks for 25 rand before this pandemic. Now you're getting a single mask for from anything from 40 rand to 14 to about 25 rand. And it's difficult to see that changing. And that's the crazy part. And many people that I encounter who are selling masks are not factories, are not the traditional people involved in this industry. It's housewives, it's guys. You know, I met two young guys in their 20s driving beautiful convertible BMWs, and they were offering me masks for 9 rand.
They were for how much?
9 rand. 9 rand a mask. 9 rand. Right, they started off at 10 rand 50. They eventually dropped to 9 rand. But I mean, they were both, you know, when I looked at them, they were both employed. I won't mention one by a retailer, but it's literally everybody has become a middleman for masks. And I think there lies the problem, is there's a factory and there's you, Howard, you want the mask, I'm in between. And I'm putting a healthy markup in between. And that's what essentially happened, is that the world is awash with masks.
And the problem is that from everything I'm reading, it's medical professionals who just don't have access. Excuse me, to them. I spoke to a good friend in New York whose wife is a it's not something they have here. It's called physician's assistant. So it's sort of between a qualified nurse and a doctor. They're able to prescribe and whatever. She's running one of the ERs, one of the emergency rooms, and they've bought her privately. They've managed to procure, as a you know, her husband, all of her protection equipment, because even in New York, they are not providing enough equipment that they can rely on, and medical the frontliners are being hammered by this virus, and it's a terrible thing. Whereas the reality is that you and I don't actually need these masks. I mean, I haven't even tried to buy one, just because, you know, from everything I've understood, unless you're infected, there's absolutely no reason why you should need one.
So in fact, there was a video, I don't know if you guys saw it, it's going around on the internet, a woman from the Czech Republic telling everyone how the Czech Republic, in fact, had very low infection rates because they required everyone to wear a mask. Mm. So I sent to Anton Marburg this video, and I said, I've received it probably 20 times. Please, won't you tell us what your view is?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he had the most wonderful reaction. And he said, just because she's a beautiful young lady doesn't mean she's right. And we hold by the World Health Organization, and the World Health Organization says only medical staff require masks, so you do not.
Right.
Howard, if I can add my 2 cents to that, from my little understanding of the masks, you're getting two types of masks, the three-ply, which is the loose-fitting thing, and then the N95, that respirator that fits tightly. And my understanding is that if I, let's say, I'm visiting a relative in hospital, I would be required to wear a mask so that I don't infect them. So it's not to help me, stop me from getting infected, but if I sneeze or whatever, I don't infect the person who's vulnerable. Now, a lot of people who are walking around are wearing that type of mask with the hope that it will stop them getting the virus. Whereas you get the one that fits very snugly and covers your, you know, your nose and mouth, and that one is the one that prevents you spreading it and getting something, the N95. And, but regardless, you know, people are buying this three-ply mask and they're paying a fortune. And I think there's a lot of confusion where people aren't very clear. I mean, I've seen those messages a lot where people are saying, you have to wear masks, you have to wear masks. But I do think, though, the positive is, I mean, not so much in the Jewish community. I think the aftermath of this will be a world that views hygiene very differently. I mean, at home, I don't know how many times the girl sanitized. I mean, the one actually said her hands were turning yellow from the sanitizer, because almost every couple of minutes people are washing their hands and sanitizing. So I think, all said and done, it's going to be interesting to see the lessons that we take from this about hygiene.
That is,
I'll never be able to sing Happy Birthday again after this.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to stop that completely. Absolutely.
Just by the way, one of the things that we are doing, and it comes to Luba's point, is how to access some of these government schemes. So Herschel Jarvis will be running a panel for us in the next week or so, and we'll be looking at all of these government incentive schemes, the tax scheme, the VAT implications, the loans. How do you actually access them? Because I think a lot of people know that they're out there, but your ability and what you actually do to get a benefit from it, people are very unsure. So Herschel's going to be putting together an amazing panel for us just to look at the opportunities that are there. How do you get a small business loan? How does the Rambam Trust work? How does the government loan scheme work? Who has to pay lower PAYE? There are certain delays in provisional tax. So Herschel's going to be unpacking all of those with the panel for us over the next week, which I think will be very useful for people running particularly small businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't have a lot of time, Luba. I just want to address one subject with you. I spoke a little bit earlier excuse me, to John Steenhuisen from the DA. And I commended them on the fact that that they are working so closely with government, that there's been a very, very clear philosophy adopted or attitude adopted to not criticize, but to rather just work towards the same goal. What's your thoughts on how government is working?
I think government can be commended. In a way, it's a bit of a catch-22 because government has moved very swiftly. So if you look at, for instance, raising the funding that the president spoke about, the declaration of the emergency, and related issues, be it the tax breaks, government has moved incredibly quickly in getting those into place, and they have to be commended for that. The challenge, I suppose, is afterwards, because what people are saying is that government can actually move incredibly swiftly when there's a need to or when they want to. So it's impressive, and I hope that it can be sustained beyond that. And I think all of us have to do our bit and be less critical. I mean, obviously, we may have issues about, you know, we should have started earlier and all of those things, but that's all water under a bridge. And I think at the moment they've done well. Where they are lacking is the other Howard was saying is, it's just the clarity, you know, the VAT issue, you go on the VAT, you've got to look for the information. Nobody is sending it there. And people are saying to me, Lube, SARS has not sent this notification to me, but it is on the SARS website. So I think there just need to be a bit sharper on some of the incentives and some of the issues. For instance, if you want to drive and be out of your home and be an essential services provider, you have to go to the website, and it's not user-friendly. So if I put my details, I can't then add other people. And then you're wondering, well, how do I add somebody? I've got four employees. So they've done the first bit very well, but there's just some kind of back-end stuff that needs to be just sorted. But overall, I think they've done very well. I know people, some of them were wondering, why is the president addressing us so often? I mean, the last address, people were on social media saying, what did he say? And the one person said, well, he wanted to say goodnight to us. And the person said, well, that's very nice. We've never had a president come on air to wish us goodnight.
I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was masterful. I thought the fact that whoever advised him told him to sit down, it was as if he was inviting us into one of his meetings and bringing us into his confidence and updating us. I thought it was absolutely outstanding.
I think, Howard, all of us are in uncharted territory, to be honest. So we can bicker and complain as much as we want. I mean, even if you go back to apartheid, the state of emergency was never quite like this. So we're living through a period that I think is different for everybody, a challenge, and I think government has no playbook to go by either. So we have to understand that they've got to improvise and tweak as they go. But so far, the level of compliance, the level of information that they're giving every day, it's commendable.
Guys, we have to leave it there. Unfortunately, it is 8:52. Howard Saxton, Lube Mayakisa, thank you guys. As always, always a fascinating conversation. I'm Howard Feldman. A very good morning.